Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending upon where you are in the world. This is Walter Davis with Progress in the World Radio Show, coming to you from beautiful Canyon Lake, California, just east of Los Angeles. And we, again, have Reverend Fred Shaw on board, coming from Los Angeles. How are you doing this morning, Reverend Shaw?
I am doing fine, and I want to thank you for having me on your show.
Well, we really appreciate you and the great message that you bring every single time. Today we're going to be discussing a very difficult topic, child drugging, restraints, racism, and electrical shock and our mental health industry. And it's just appalling what's going on. We're going to be exploring electrical shock programs and our broken mental health treatment system. And with that, I'm just going to kind of go over a couple of facts that I have here. Restraints, psychiatric drugs, and electroshock are the therapies used on children, some younger than 5 years old. Freedom of Information Act reveals that 22 states are currently administering electroshock to children, and four of those states are electroshocking children age 0 to 5 years old. I mean, so can you imagine getting an electroshock treatment? That just seems to me to be a terrible thing. And in some cases, I've seen where social workers and other mental health officials can force you to medicate or electroshock your children. They can take your kids away. We had a SWAT team in Michigan come in and take a woman's child away. I have that story on my website at Citizens Demanding Justice. So we need to become much more familiar with these things, what's going on with it, and we have no better speaker than Reverend Shaw. Tell us about some of this, Reverend Shaw. What is the background on this?
Well, the background on all of this is how deeply rooted psychiatry is in racism. The things that you do to people, you either are racist or you don't have a soul. Because of the fact that they're doing them to white kids also, then I have to assume they do not have a soul. This thing is so deep that people don't know that the undermining in this country of religion itself, who believe differently, are those who choose not to believe. I'm talking about the undermining itself comes out of mental health. The fact that black people's skin was considered a disease shows you there's no science in this. I've had people say, well, that was a long time ago. Okay, well, but 50% of the medical students to this day believe that black people's nerve endings is less sensitive than whites. They believe that black people's skin, and I don't know how you can do that if you're in the medical profession, believe that our skin is thicker, therefore we can tolerate more pain. Therefore, when black people now are going to the hospitals because of the overdose crisis with fentanyl and things like that and the opioids, now when black people go to the hospital with legitimate pain, you can't even really get legitimate painkillers. And so when we see this going through from, we talked about its origin with a negritude, that was the dark people's skin, and they told white people to stay away from black people, and the only way to know if black people were sane or cured was if they turned white. Then during slavery, we had Dr. Samuel Cartwright come up with a word called drepidomania. Drepida meant runaway slave, mania meant crazy. So they said that if you ran away from your master, regardless of the conditions that you were in and the lack of rights that you had to exert yourself as a human being, then you were mentally ill. If you backtalked, that was a sign of mentally ill. You refused to work, it was a sign of mental illness. All of these things have justified and has come all the way down. Even when Martin Luther King and people like that marched against the racism in this country, they were said by mental health, by psychiatry, to be creating protest psychosis, delusions of grandeur, the idea that you are somebody. All of these things were in mental health, and I can bring it all the way up, and we talked about it on the last show, to Killology, because that is primarily directed to the black and poor communities. So, you know, this just lays the foundation, because could you in good conscience ever electroshock a child from 0 to 5? We've all heard the terrible twos. You have children. I have children. We've seen them at 2 years old. That's when they first start to exert themselves, and they explore, and they get into everything, and they cry because you haven't been able to add that discipline point up into there, because you're trying to control and make sure that they're comfortable and that they develop positively a thing. So they become what they call the terrible twos. But that's not a mental illness. You went through it. I went through it. Our children went through it. Their children went through it. So why are we electroshocking children who aren't even old enough to walk or talk? This is the scary thing about this. And then you're doing it to the elderly. You're doing it to the women. I'll pause and let you ask the question, but I can tell you this, 50% of electroshock is done to people 65 years of age or older. Two-thirds of electroshock is done to women. You pick on the elderly women and children. Where I grew up, you were considered a bully, you know, and they're making money on these people, and they cannot show you where anyone has gotten better. They can show you where they have gotten quiet. They can show you when they don't get on your nerves as much anymore, but they can't show you that they've gotten better.
Well, this is really a tragedy. I mean, the fact that they are electroshocking elderly people. I mean, they have weaker hearts. It seems to me that would be very dangerous to be putting an electroshock through someone that's elderly.
Well, you're absolutely right. And people do die on while going through electroshock. Women, they are giving electroshock to women who are pregnant, which essentially means that they are electroshocking children before they're even born. Because when you electroshock the mother, the baby is getting the same electroshock. So before he's even born, he's being destroyed. And so we have to look at this and say, wait a minute. Who electroshocks a pregnant woman? Because I'm going to tell you, only two things can happen. When she has her miscarriage, that is either gross neglect because the doctor did not know that she was pregnant, which means he did not take tests, he did not do what he was supposed to do, or it's actually a crime. Because you knew that the baby was there, you knew the mother was pregnant, and then you caused the mother to have a miscarriage and lose her baby. One of the psychiatrists that came through the museum said, well, we only do it in severe cases for those who are truly depressed. I said, so you think if the mother wakes up and finds out she's lost her baby, that she won't be more depressed? You know? Every mother I've asked that to said they would be if they lost their baby. Sometimes when people are in these deep sadness or depressed modes, the baby is the only thing they got to hang on to. So now you done aborted the baby. Call it a miscarriage. You know, that sounds better. But if I walked up and punched that woman in the stomach, I would go to prison. But they can electroshock the woman and cause that type of trauma on the baby before it is even born.
Well, that's really a sad state of affairs. I mean, I just find it so frustrating that we have this mental health system that's so far off of the rails. I mean, the medications that they're giving people are causing them to kill themselves. People are depressed. And they're going in for help, and the medications cause them to kill themselves or kill other people. You know, all of the mass shootings that we have had have involved people taking psychotropics. People are not getting that point. I mentioned.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go on.
No, I said, and that goes from Columbine all the way up to the Las Vegas shooting, the Colorado shootings, Dallas, Texas. All of these places, when you look, you find psychiatric drugs in the history of at least one of the participants in the mass killings and stuff. CCHR has tried to make that known to law enforcement, legislators, things like that. But this is too big of a issue. I said on your show last week, one person told me who I will not ever, because I promised I wouldn't, well, I'll never think, who was a legislator who said basically, if I take on this, then they will hire people to run against me, take me out of office, and I can't do the other good work I did. See, this is what we're under. They spend so much on television that the television networks can't report this massively. They make little reports, you know, but they can't take this on like they're taking on what's going on in Ukraine. We see that on every network. But we have slaughter going on right here in our own nation that we're not dealing with. We got injustice in our own nation we haven't dealt with. And I get we want to protect other people, but we don't spend the same time protecting the African nations like we protect the European nations. And so we have to say, hey, wait a minute. Where, if we're America and we're the symbol of justice, then we have to be about it in our own backyard. And then that way we have the moral authority to go out to the world. But we can't go out to the world where people can talk about the black man still being a second-class citizen in this country right now. And this all emanates out the idea that there's a group that's inferior to another group. And you can always justify it by making sure that the playing field is not level. So therefore, you know, Martin Luther King used to say, you know, if a man is behind in a race, he must run faster than the man in front or he will forever remain behind. So as long as you put these programs in that make people feel they're entitled, that they're supposed to get something for nothing, that they, when you do this, you cripple that people so that they don't move forward. Well, in mental health, we're crippling the mind of people. And we're making people mental patients for life.
Well, I mean, the reality is that you can find liquor stores on every corner. I mean, there's an abundance of liquor, for example, at gas stations. You can get it at drug stores. You can buy it at supermarkets. And, you know, the alcohol causes significant brain damage. It causes every organ in the body to do the opposite of what it's supposed to do. Likewise, you can get cigarettes. You can get plenty of nicotine, and each cigarette has over 600 carcinogens inside of it. And the billboard posters you see in neighborhoods of color, you see the Old English 800, you see all the malt liquor advertisements, but you don't see that in Beverly Hills. You don't see that in La Jolla. You don't see that in Del Mar. You don't see those type of billboard ads up promoting those kinds of things. So the attack on mental health in this country is coming from many different angles, not just the medication and electrical shock. And people think that it's okay, you know, to consume large amounts of alcohol, for example, which causes every organ in the body to do the opposite of what it's supposed to do. So I've worked in the field of chemical dependency, you know, for over 30 years. And so when you then add in electroshock treatments and these medications, I mean, they're not reporting that 22 veterans are committing suicide every single day. 22. And hundreds more are dying in their sleep due to the medications that they're getting just as well. And I see the rise of road rage incidences. That,
well, you know, it's really amazing that you're bringing this up. I want to get first with the veterans. What we forget is that many people came back from other wars like Vietnam because they were made to do things or witness things that went against their moral structure. When you do things that violate the spiritual agreements, and I'm not trying to preach religion, but I am a minister. When you violate things, the spiritual agreements, then what happens is it causes you conflict within. You blow up a village of women and children, and you can pretty much bet if you're a good person, you're going to suffer all kind of trauma from that. Well, but right now we're drugging our veterans, and we're not at war. We're not doing those things. We haven't, you know, been at war. So why are we drugging people coming out of the military when they haven't been engaged in like they were in Vietnam or Korea or those type of things? So it's a fallacy to even think that the veterans coming out, and I've talked to veterans who have come out who were drugged and wasn't even told why they were drugged and did not even receive counseling before they were drugged. So this is just move the medication, make the profit, create the mental illness that we get paid to handle, and that has to stop. I mean, the people have to rise up against this type of treatment and things because it does not benefit society. And when you give a veteran a drug that can cause him to commit suicide, that drug can always also cause him to commit homicide. And who's more dangerous than a veteran who has lost his mind? Did we lose the connection here?
Yes, we did. But I'm back now.
Okay.
Are you hearing
okay.
me? Sorry about that. Something happened. I don't know what. The
yes,
Skype call dropped. But anyway, continue, sir.
Yeah, so the thing is that when we're talking about the veterans, first of all, I tell people, and I said it on your last show, I tell people, don't believe me. Believe the commercials. The commercials say can cause suicidal thoughts and actions. In other words, when they add "and actions," that means people on this drug have tried to kill themselves. Now, if a suicide is bad, then the person who can commit suicide can always commit homicide because a suicide is a homicide done to yourself. So just like you kill yourself, you can kill others. I'm an ex-Los Angeles County Sheriff Deputy. When we went on suicide calls, we went with our guns out because people who have gotten to that state will also take out other people with them. So now we're giving a person a drug, and we say it can cause suicide, but they try to hide the fact that it can cause homicide. Look at these killings, kill their mother or their parents and both parents and stuff. I mean, I don't know what is the exact percentage, but I guarantee you that a large percentage of those people are on those psychiatric drugs. Because traditionally, unless there's something far, far wrong and grotesque in that family, people don't kill their parents, you know. But when you see in this, and I the first time as a sheriff deputy, when I recognized this, I was actually doing an interview, and a kid was saying that he killed his mother because she ruined his life. And I asked him, how did she ruin your life? She didn't buy me a car. And my therapist said that she was part of my problem. What the heck? You a grown man, she won't buy you a car? But so the thing is that since this is all subjective, there is no measurable outcome to this, then people can do what they want to, and as long as you have a PhD, it doesn't matter if your ability to handle people is good or not. You are the authority, even though you can't take anybody and heal them. You can't take anybody and bring them out of their condition. Well, how does that benefit us if you can't do that? I mean, I knew ministers that could do that. I've done it. So I should not be a better expert at the mind than a person who was trained in that field. But I've talked people out of jumping. I've talked people out of committing suicide. I've given people reasons why they should live. I sat there and ran down. I just had a person one day tell me all the people that they think would miss them if they committed suicide. And by the time they got through, they was in tears and couldn't kill themselves. So, I mean, it's necessary doing it. So how come the experts don't know how to do it without trying to give you a pill or electroshock you?
It's really incredible that they've done away with talk therapy. These so-called mental health specialists do not know how to run content groups or process groups. They have no idea what they are even. I had a person at the VA with a master's degree tell me that a process group was where everybody laid down on a sofa. I mean, have you ever seen people in group therapy with everyone laying down on a sofa? So they don't even know what a process group is. You can call the VA hospital and ask to speak to somebody in mental health and talk to them about a process group, and they don't even know what it is. So all they know to do is to give you medication.
Well, that's because of the fact that, like I mentioned earlier, this is not science. This is all subjective. If you and I had our degrees in psychiatry and stuff, we could come up with a method, whatever method we wanted, and it has to be accepted in the industry. As long as we gave the appearance we were given drugs, we would be okay. We cannot. You're talking about a country who it's against the law to even cure anything. How will you get that result out of the medical field? And I'm not attacking doctors and stuff. My main thing is, I tell people all the time, me personally and CCHR, we're not against mental health. We are against fraudulent mental health. We are against drugging kids. I had the top psychiatrist in L.A. County say in front of the head of the Department of Children and Family Services that they were drugging children with less than 7 minutes of evaluation. I accused him of it. He couldn't deny it. And then at the end, the head of the Children's Service said, how did you know that? I said, I didn't, but it's faster than that by how quickly he agreed. Well, what was the excuse? Too many children. They can't counsel them all. So you're drugging. So it's not mental health that we're looking at. We're looking at mental control in this country. The child is given the drug to check, to stop his behavior. He keeps running around. He's knocking over things. He's got all this energy balled up, and he's all over the place. We give him the drug to slow him down. That's control. If it was mental health, he would think faster. He would think clearer. His IQ would go up. All of those things come with health. But no, what we do is subduing, slowing down so he's manageable. That's control.
So you made a great point last week, and that if somebody can't feed their child, they don't have enough money, they don't have food, they can be very depressed. But if you give them the food, if you give them the money to be able to support their family, then the depression goes away.
Look, you're absolutely right. Look, I love my wife. I have a very good wife. If my wife left me, I would probably be very sad, and some people would probably say that was depression. But I wouldn't need a pill. All I would need is the skill to get my wife back. And once I got my wife back, all signs of sadness and depression would disappear. It's like we have gotten away from fixing the person's problem. I have nowhere to stay. Can you give me housing and a responsibility so I can be feel like I am a contributing member to society? That alone brings well-being. But what they do is they take this individual, they give him the psychiatric drug. Mom died. What happened was this. Mom died, and he was sad. They gave a pill. He started hearing voices. They gave him another pill. He started feeling suicidal. Now, he's pretty much no good. So when you want to put him in housing, he don't want to be in housing. You want to give him a job, he don't want the job. He's totally disassociated from society. But what if you would have just sat there and explained to him that death is just as normal as life, that every individual who was born into the world has a date when they check out of this body, that it happens to the rich and the poor, it happens to the white and the black, it happens to the Pope, it happens to the pauper, it happens to all of society, then maybe the individual starts getting the idea that this is a natural process of some sort, because every person who dies was born into this world. So we got this come and go. If you start explaining it like that, if you come from the spiritual aspect, as a man is a spiritual being, as a woman is a spiritual being, and maybe there's a continuation based on every religion on the planet, that you go to another state or whatever. Some even believe you come back again. But if you can convince them that the spirit still lives, maybe some of this fear of death, maybe some of this unknown of death can be handled. But if you say that man is an animal, which psychiatry does, that man is an animal, you take away the spirit. Well, then why do we give him mental health treatment in the first place? If he's an animal, we don't go out to the jungle and give the tiger a Prozac. We don't go, tell the hippopotamus he got to be on drugs. No, but there's something different about man. So man can create computers. Man can create rocket ships. Man can do electronics. Man can fix the plumbing. Man can do a lot of different things. That's what mankind can do. Well, maybe we are different than any other creature on earth, and maybe they need to start addressing it from that point of view, because the only way you can really electroshock children is if you believe that they're an animal and that they're not a spiritual being. Otherwise, that would be the most hideous crime that anybody could commit.
Where did this come from? What can you give me more information on the background? Where did electroshock therapy originate?
Oh, man. Well, I can just say this, that I used to know that history. I hate to, but I want to say it comes from the idea that you could make changes in the brain. One of the things that we have to know about psychiatry is it's also had its past of lobotomies. Now we see electroshock. We saw it drop out. We see it back. The idea that you could change somebody's brain by giving them electroshock, which, by the way, you and I, if we had electroshock, it would kill approximately 1 million brain cells. Now, if you electroshock a child, it kills those 1 million brain cells, but then all of the brain cells that would have been created off those brain cells never get born. So you're pretty much stifling the child for the rest of his life. And that's what I mean when I say we make people mental health patients for life. So you're killing the brain cells with electroshock. You're giving them psychiatric drugs, causes delusions and all of these things. Every time a person gives a new symptom, you give them a new drug. We got children 7, 8, 9 years old on 13 different drugs. You know, I mean, this is what we're looking at, and this is why we have so many problems with it. And this electroshock, it is not anything that benefits people. It is a destructive method. They used to could not shelter. It was his own worst enemy. And when I say that, I mean this. Electroshock, you would watch a person in the 50s or stuff whose body goes into convulsions and bones would come out, spines would snap, people would die on the table, all these dislocated bones. They were their own worst enemies. So what they did is when it dropped out, they come back with new and improved. But what they did is gave you a paralytic drug so your body wouldn't do what it would normally do. On top of that, they gave you anesthesia so you were knocked out. So you could see if you observed closely maybe some trembling of the feet or toes or something, but you couldn't see the violent convulsions that were going on. And so they thought that was new and improved. Again, if you take a person who was unconscious and beat them with a baseball bat, their body still goes through the trauma. If you're in a coma and we start punching you, your body's still going through that trauma, but it's not responding. So they actually call that a victory in mental health, that the body doesn't show the damage that's being done, even though the damage is being done.
So you're saying that the electroshock therapy causes the body to make such violent convulsions that joints become dislocated. Is that what you're saying?
That's the way it was in the past, and the only reason it doesn't do it now is because they are giving paralytic drugs. That's the only reason that you don't see it now. The body is frozen by the drug and is unable to show the appropriate response for the amount of damage that's being done to it.
That's simply amazing, and the fact that that could be done to an infant, it's just appalling to me.
Well, you know, when you look at the history of it from its, you know, racist past, you know, the question is, how come psychiatry, if they're experts in the art of living, have never taken the lead to stop wars, have never taken the lead to stop racism? They've actually backed it, and as a couple of years ago, the American Psychiatric, I think Psychological Association, gave an apology to the black community for the way they've been treated, the ignoring, police abuse, all of these different things. Now, I personally sent a letter rejecting the apology because they didn't change their behavior. They're still doing electroshock. They're still doing psychiatric drugging, and an apology came because of the fact that they haven't been able to get blacks and Hispanics and them to go into getting mental health treatment. So they figured that if they apologized, then we'd let our guards down and all march in and get drugged and become a victim again. So, you know, that's what, you know, we're looking at with this. And I just want to say that the one thing that we have to do is understand, is appropriate behavior for the situation that you're in. If my mother gets in a car, starts it up, and it blows up the car, and she dies, what is supposed to be my appropriate response? Am I supposed to laugh and joke about how my mother was blown up? Or would I receive a sadness at the news that my mother had been killed? So if being sad at the death of someone you love is a mental illness, then what is the appropriate response? What am I supposed to do? And who's supposed to know enough about the mind and spirit that you can tell me how long my grieving process is supposed to be? Your grieving process might be 6 months. Mine might be 6 years. But who's to say my grieving process is wrong? Maybe I didn't treat my mother as well as I should have, and that's part of my grieving process. Maybe I didn't get a chance to tell her thank you enough. Maybe it's a whole lot of things could be the reason, but what makes it, what is the appropriate response when we get news that someone we love, someone we might love like our children more than we love ourselves, the appropriate response?
That's simply amazing. The roots of racism. And I remember going through your display at CCHR and seeing things that were developed by Hitler, you know, being used by the psychiatric industry today. It's just appalling. It's just very sad that we have such irresponsibility. I would highly recommend that everyone watch the movie, at CCHR, The Hidden Enemy. It's really revealing when you go around to all the armed forces all over the country, all over the world, for that matter, Russia, Germany, England. They go to the navies, they go to the armies, the Marine Corps, and person after person is saying how these drugs have destroyed their lives, how they have disrupted their lives, when it's been proven that process groups and talk therapy are very effective, yet they've gotten rid of those things and they just give people medications. And that's why we see the explosion of hostilities aboard these aircraft where people are just being restrained. I've never seen a situation where we've had so many people have to be handcuffed and planes having to divert and land at different airfields. And so what I imagine is that people are going to their doctors saying, I'm very depressed, I have COVID, or my family members have died or friends have died from COVID. Can you give me something to make me feel better? And they're giving them these medications that don't work. These medications kill you. You know, so this is a very terrible situation we're in now. And I'm very afraid that if Governor Newsom is able to get his legislation passed, whereas homeless people are going to be forced into the mental health system, what are we going to have? We're going to have a lot of mass murderers out here after they're taking these medications. Do you agree with that, Reverend Shaw?
I absolutely agree with it. And number one, the idea of putting the homeless in mental institutions is actually a way of not addressing the fact that we have not been able to help the poor. Because I have been one step, literally, from being rich, and I have been one step literally at one time in my life of being homeless. And, you know, the thing is that sometimes people just need a hand, the situation. And this country has to reevaluate who it works for. Does it work for the people, or does it work for the big corporations, or how are we going to do this? Because it doesn't make sense to make homelessness a mental illness when you could, first of all, let me tell you how easy it would be to handle the homeless situation. This is so simple. You just, first of all, you take the willing, the working homeless. There are people who are homeless living in their cars and stuff that work every day. They use the gymnasiums to go to. They take out memberships so they can go to the gymnasiums and take showers and brush their teeth and do things like that. Change their clothes, and so it's their car, it's the cleaners or the washer, the gym, and then that's how they prepare and get around so they can go to work and be clean and have the hygiene in. So we would first take the working homeless and find the housing for those people. And since they're working, we can basically give them housing based on their income. Then let's take the willing homeless, those people who are homeless who do want to do something. You see them homeless, and they're out there sweeping the streets anyway, and they're out there doing those type of things. And they come in, too, and they ask you, can they clean your car window? Can they help you do something? I know I've used some of those homeless people to help me move boxes and stuff when I had storage and all of that. Let's deal with the homeless people, the willing. So we got the working. We got the willing to get half of the homeless people right there. Then maybe we can find ways of dealing with the other half, because a certain part of those people are homeless because they've been on that medication. They've lost their way. They've been electroshock. I've talked to people who have had electroshock, basically saying after they got the electroshock, they didn't have the ability to really hold down a full job and stuff. Now we can look at what we can do to take care of those people. But even that, institutionalize them won't, because they'll fight back. Police will kill some of them. We'll have marches forever. We have to sit down and strategize, and we can't let the people who make the money on the blood of those in the street make the decision on how to handle those in the street. That's where the problem comes in. I mean, I just took care of the working homeless and the willing homeless right here in 2 minutes. It's way simpler than they make it, you know, so I don't know. What we can't get enough people to get interested enough to stand up for our rights. We only, you know, when it makes TV or something like that, but we were talking about restraint. The same thing that happened to George Floyd is happening to children in mental institutions where they're being held down and they can't breathe and they die. But it don't make the news because there's no camera. There's nobody listening. When a girl gets raped in the mental institution, well, she's on the psychiatric drug. You know, that creates illusions. They'll say it in court then, but they won't say it in court when that same person murders somebody on the street that the drugs caused it. You're here in the mental institution because you're crazy. So therefore, you accusing the great doctor of raping you when that's been done all over the world. I mean, nobody's asked the wellness of mental health based on what they did to the Africans in South Africa in those prison camps. You have to be mentally ill to treat people like that. But these was our learned people responsible putting these prison camps together where you have less rights in a mental institution than you do in an actual prison. This is the scary thing about mental health. And what's even scarier, somebody can say, you and I did something, and we were acting crazy. And how do they know that your thyroid isn't messing up? How do they know if the person has a urinary tract infection? You know, those two things alone can mirror mental illness. Urinary tract infection, a lot of times have been the problem in women who were considered mentally ill, but they were having the effect of that of being sick. Where is the mandatory checking or the medical checking of an individual to see if they have underlying conditions? How do you know the difference between a person who has a tumor on the brain and a person who's just babbling incoherently? How do you know the difference between depression and anemia if we don't do full medical examinations to see what's happening? How do we know a person doesn't have an infection in his teeth that is causing him to be off kilter? Or slight vertigo where he doesn't even know that his balance is off? See, we're way too careless and too quick to sign off on everything as mental illness because we're in a controlled society.
So one of the terrible things is dental. You know, I just wonder, why don't we have dentists, you know, open 24/7? I mean, you go to the hospital, the emergency room, there is no dentist there. And yet many diseases are caused by poor dental work. And also the cost of dental insurance, and most dental plans don't even cover a lot of things. You know, they have these ridiculously low maximums in terms of, so you can max out very quickly and not have dental coverage. I don't know of a good dental plan out here, and I'm a financial professional, and I don't know of a good dental plan, you know, that even exists, other than the retired military and the military type dental plans. And some of the government, you know, official things. But, you know, you brought up a great point there. You know, they don't have people that are experts dealing with this situation. And even the so-called experts are fraudulent. Can you talk to us? Tell me what a lobotomy is. I heard you mention that word. Many people may not know what that
is. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. A lobotomy is when you take an ice pick type device, and if you reach up and you feel that bone right above the eyeball, well, between that bone and the eye, there's a space there type device, and you push it into the brain and you rake it. And basically the person becomes docile because you're destroying his brain. This happened to Rosemary Kennedy, President Kennedy's sister. The father allowed Dr. Walter Freeman to come and give her a lobotomy while the mother was out of town, and she was never the same again. I think the most she could do was speak three words. And, you know, it was just a terrible thing. Well, 1 million people were given lobotomies before they banned it. And it's just a sad thing because the way they do the propaganda, the way, like, we see all of the advertising and stuff on medicine and these psychiatric drugs and stuff, people buy into it. People would actually walk up to his vehicle for him to do lobotomies on them. See, that's how much it can get with whatever we're seeing on TV or whatever we see in the printed paper. We assume that if it's there, it's true. But it's not always true. So this person was walking around Walter Freeman. He had what they called the lobotomy mobile. He would go to the beaches, parks, everywhere. People would come up and he would give them a lobotomy on the spot, destroy it. He even said that black people, basically what he indicated was black people's family system was so strong that he could destroy the minds of black people and they would still be taken care of. It's just the idea that he could destroy the minds of people and he could get an idea that this was okay. See, this is your truly sick people in society. These are your antisocial people who can harm people without a flinch, who can kill without any guilt, feelings of guilt. It's like that's what we're looking at, and we see in a lot of these people who have to be in mental health because to do these things to people to be a part of that field, or you would speak up. And they're not speaking up like they should. Now, there are always some. Don't get me wrong. Like, we can't say no psychiatrist speaks up. Because I've encountered people at our museum who were psychiatrists and psychologists who quit the profession because they couldn't go along with the sham. You know, so, you know, but I just think that, you know, the people have to rise up and demand that their politicians take a look at this, demand the clinical trials that are necessary to verify or to deny mental health benefit to society. You know, they can verify it or deny it, but you got to do it with clinical trials. And most of these medications, you know, are not under the scrutiny that they should have been under because we found at CCHR that over half of the people who are psychiatrists work for pharmaceutical companies. So, I mean, the FDA, half of the FDA work for the pharmaceutical companies. So how do they bite the hand that feed them? I mean, you don't. So drugs are getting passed through that have all of these warning labels on it. And, you know, one of the politicians said, you know, that the cure can't be worse than the disease. And we're seeing this.
So the sad thing is that we have a number of people in our society that are just apathetic. They don't get involved. They seem to just be in this bubble where they don't react to anything. They don't know anything. They don't know what's going on. They don't watch the news. They don't look at media. They just tune themselves out. And as long as they have their food and their car and their little job and their house and their family, they just think they can isolate from everybody else and just not get involved. And this is one of the reasons why we have such horrendous erosion of our rights and assaults and attacks on our dignity as human beings, because we're not standing up. So many of us are not standing up. And often I'm asked, why haven't they killed you yet? They ask me, why haven't they killed me? You know, I just have to stand up and I have to try to motivate. And my job is to operate media, to be able to record events like this and distribute the information, to try to make people aware of what's going on, to transcend race and religion. We must unite together as human beings to be treated like human beings and demand that we have justice. And as long as we have such a large portion of our society that just checks out and they don't get involved and they're not aware of anything, and we're going to continue to have this miasma that we're in right now.
Well, you know, one of the things that we're looking at in society today is people are being taught consciously not to participate. It's like, you know, we all allowing everybody else to handle it. We're kind of Messiah conscious. We're waiting on the next Martin Luther King or Jesus to show up and free everybody. And we have to understand that our freedom comes when we stand up for our rights. It's not for Dr. Martin Luther King to risk his life to stand up for me. Maybe his life won't be risked if I stand up with him. But most of us, we tend to want to talk about the situation, but we don't do anything about the situation. And that's where I think that we're, as a society, are faltering in the fact that we're not doing. We're talking. We like, for example, when you have police abuse in your community, the community knows that the police are bad, and everybody talks to each other, but nobody goes down and file a complaint. And you know, this is something that we have to address. When in law enforcement, if you file so many complaints against a particular officer and they don't address it, it allows people to be sued all up the line when something goes down that is horrendous. And now it comes to the public eye. When they look into that file, they say, this guy got 9 complaints. How come you haven't handled him? How come he didn't go to another community where he maybe could fit in better, because he sure didn't fit in down here in the inner city, because he didn't know the difference between 2 people fighting and 2 people arguing about a sports event. I mean, so we have to be able to, and that actually happened, by the way, with me in the car. My partner thought that it was a major fight about to go down, and it was just 2 guys arguing over who would have won the fight between Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali. So, you know, but he thought it was actually because, you know, how black people can get animated when they're discussing, but it wasn't nowhere near a fight. You know, but these things can be misinterpreted, and if a person is misinterpreting, getting it wrong too many times, maybe they have to be in a community where they won't have that conflict, where they can service better. So the rules are in place. We just have to, as a society, participate in the game and quit wanting or cherishing our comfort more than we cherish our freedom. That's where I think the breakdown is. We want to be comfortable. I can watch the Laker game tonight, so therefore I missed the protest. Well, that's not what we should be doing. We should protest. And now with all this technology, catch the Laker game on the rerun or playback or recording or whatever. So these are the type of things that we got to do. I'm just talking normal now. I'm just talking people now, you know, and that's what we have to do.
So we have this system where they're making the money up out of thin air and then making it hard for us to get. When we look at the Federal Reserve banking system, you know, for example, they are simply making the money up and making it hard for us to get. Yet we're paying $6, $5, $6, $7 a gallon for gas, and we have CEOs of oil companies making $100,000 per day. This is a ridiculous situation that we're in, and we're in the situation because people are not standing up, and they don't understand that what is happening is the New Deal is what really is under assault by the oligarchs. They want to destroy Social Security. They want to destroy child labor laws. They want to be able to make people work as long as they want to make them work. And a part of this is to pump these drugs into our society to really immobilize us so we really don't use our brains and you know, give us enough alcohol and nicotine and these other things that are really going to destroy our ability to think clearly. You know, we don't have critical thinking being taught in our schools. I didn't learn about critical thinking and fallacy and judgment until I got into college. So why don't we teach those things much earlier so that people know how to think instead of what to think? You know, so what I'm observing is that we're being taught what to think and not being taught how to think. You know, try to have a conversation about straw man or red herring, slippery slope. the average person cannot have a conversation about those fallacies and judgments, and they don't know what critical thinking is. I've talked to people about nonviolent communication, the mass shootings that we have, the conflicts that we have within our school systems could be solved if we taught children how to be nonviolent communicators. Yet people don't know what that is. They think that they do, and they give me this really snide smile when I bring up nonviolent communication, not knowing that it's a science, not knowing that it's a way of talking to people through the language of compassion. Yet we don't have these things being taught, which brings to my mind that there are forces out here that really don't want us to do better, that really don't want to solve the problems within our community, that just want to make profits off of warehousing people, primarily in prison, but now the opportunity is coming to warehouse people in mental health institutions. And this is simply a terrible situation that we're in, and we really have to stand up. And so the procedure should be to educate ourselves. Look for the facts yourself. There's a plethora of information out here on the internet in other locations, where, and CCHR has an excellent website. I have excellent blogs documenting these things. Make yourself aware of the facts so you can have a factual conversation instead of something that you just use as an opinion. I talk to a lot of people that just say, well, it's not that many bad police out here. What is the basis of this? We see people being murdered in all of the major cities by police on a daily basis, yet I'm hearing people say things like, it's not too many bad police out here. Now, granted, I believe that most police are good people, but there is a lot of bad police out here. And why don't we have a database to keep track of these bad police so they don't get a chance to leave one city and just go to another? Why don't we have accountability for the psychiatric industry and the pharmaceutical industry in terms of the effectiveness? How is it that we're allowing 22 veterans to die every day and believing that we have an effective mental health system?
More people are dying. More veterans are dying at their own hands than are dying at war. And you're absolutely right. One of the problems we have in this society is that we must start educating people to the point that they can evaluate and be critical of the information that they're getting. What they're teaching us to go along. It's like some psychiatry student is supposed to say, what the heck are we electroshocking people for? I researched these drugs, and these are horrible drugs. Why are we giving them to children? You know, some of these drugs, they're illegal to give the children 2 years old, but they're giving them to them. It's like I think I mentioned last time on your show, I gave the speech, and there was a little girl that was howling and yanking her hair and scratching her face and all that, and they took her to the hospital, and she had an ear infection and head lice. I mean, it's like we have to start changing what is the standard of education in our community, because for me to be able to recite the theory of relativity and not be able to challenge one thing in it means I'm not educated in that subject. And that's what educated people do. They look at a thing and then take it to the next level. It's the guy who knows all of this stuff to the point he can actually say, this is where Tesla messed up. He should have did this. Or this is where Einstein went wrong. He should have did that. But if he's only taught to agree, and his grade is based on him being able to agree, true education. See, and that's where we're falling down. And when we don't educate people, they will not challenge. It's the reason that it was against the law to teach black people to read. Because you'll get a kid like my little 8-year-old grandbaby who challenges. You know, she was listening to something they were talking, and my grandbaby said, that's racist. And then the lady said, well, no, don't say racist, it's prejudice. She said, well, why can't I say racist? She's 8. Well, you don't want her, but she's already skipped a grade. She's already done these type of things. She reads at an 8th grade level. So she's challenging. Wait a minute, why can't I say racist instead of prejudice? Well, those are the kids that create problems in the room. See, those, this is where we are falling as a society, because I should be able to say, huh, Sigmund Freud had this wrong. Huh, how come mental health doesn't know that this is the way this goes? Because none of the psychiatrists get to invent and create on his own, and once in a while somebody will stray out, come up with a theory, then everybody just jumps on board, and nobody says, what the heck is wrong with you? Just like I did with Ebonics. I was at an event. I was introduced to one of the guys that was big in Ebonics. And he was like, he was talking about how it comes from the DNA and how we speak out of Africa and we did the thing. And I just asked a simple question in front of the whole people. I said, how come all of the people who are pushing Ebonics can speak the King's English perfectly? So is this a different type of black person who can talk about it and stuff, and it relates to the rest of us, and it don't relate to them? Because I know it's foolishness. You are educated according to your environment and the educational system you're in. If you go to South Africa, you find kids who are poor, who are far more ahead of us, because they not only speak two or three languages, they speak several dialects. Whatever the environment is, they speak the perfect English for that. And that's what every kid does. But we want to excuse the fact that the school district cannot teach the kid. We would rather label him with a disorder than to teach him how to read and write. The World Literacy Crusade, we used to have probation homes for boys, and we took kids that couldn't even read on the second and third grade level and had them reading at sixth, seventh, and eighth grade level over a year's time and so forth. So I know it can be done, because I took the stone that the builders have rejected and start building an intellectual house with some of these kids. And some of them went on to do good things and graduate from college and do. But these are the kids supposed to gave up on. So the system has to go back to where when our parents were at the PTA meetings protesting inferior education and things like that. Where is that protest now? See, that's what's happening to us. So when they start labeling black children with a learning disability and stuff, when we might be 12 to 16% of the population, but we're 30-some% of the people with those labels and special education and stuff, somebody, where's the protest? Because, yes. you know, it's that thing, you know, we don't want to accept it because it was stated in the Republican Party, but it's the tree of low expectations. Yeah, so we just assume my kids have a problem with it.
That's a terrible situation. And I think that a lot of it, as you have been seeming to talk about, a lot of these things are just economic, and so it's not mental illness, it's poverty. You know, if we focus
exactly
on poverty, if we focus on justice as hard as we focus on being anti-communist, this would be a really nice country.
If we educated the children properly, if the curriculum taught kids to think. One of the biggest problems I had when I was studying religion before I came a minister, I kept asking the wrong questions. Why did God punish him for this? Because these are the chosen people who were committing adultery and doing these. I kept asking those questions, you know, and it did not make things easy for me. See, but no, because people didn't have the answers, I was the problem asking the questions. I mean, that's what we're looking at now. You know, that's what we're looking at. Our parents
connected
up. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I mean, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I am a humanist, and so I'm asking very difficult questions. If people are going to tell me about Jesus, if they're going to tell me about this person walking the face of the earth, what about Devaki? What about Krishna? You know, what about Mithras? All of those gods that have exactly the same story, Immaculate Conception, Crucifixion and Death, Resurrection, Horus, you know, on and on and on. Thousands of years, tens of thousands of years before Christ. And I'm not getting an explanation. I have these spirit, so-called spiritual leaders. They don't know what's at the center of the earth. They don't know what a black hole is. They can't tell me what an aurora is. You know, they don't know what dark energy and what dark matter is, yet they're telling me about the creator of the entire universe. So I'm just not getting it. Those are the questions I'm not getting answered. You know, I see in the Bible where it says no graven images, yet we have these churches with all of these stained glass windows and depictions of a white Jesus standing, statues of a Mary, statues of Jesus on the cross. But I saw in the Bible very clearly it says no graven images.
Well, you know, the thing is when we talk about religion is the purpose of religion is, oh man, it's been years since I said it, but re means back, ligere, I think, means like ligament in your arms, and the shun part is at that time indicated the system. So the purpose of religion was to bind you back to your creator. But what we did is we made our creator. We didn't bind back to him. We just created him. So, but people couldn't tell, because this is what I'm talking about when I say educated. They couldn't tell that Hercules and Jesus had the same lineage. You know, he was like the mother was human and the father was the creator of the universe. So that, it's the same story, except for one was spiritually strong and one was physically strong. But it was the exact same thing, a human mother married to or impregnated by the most powerful being so-called in the universe. All of the purpose is we just have to learn from a spiritual standpoint to treat others the way we would want to be treated, to don't hurt people of goodwill, to do things to progress the society. In the end, I believe personally that we're going to find out that it's the same God, if it's the God we think or not. Something put it all here. Something created everything. Somewhere this life emanated from. Somewhere this solar system of galaxies in the universe of maybe universes came. I mean, something happened. There was a cause that made something happen. All the rest of it is different narrations of a story based on whatever we can grasp out of it. But the truth is how well do I treat Walter Davis when I'm around Walter Davis? How do I respect Fred Shaw when people are around Fred Shaw? How do I do this? That's all that's important. We take religion, and we even got off our subject, we've been talking about it. We take religion and turn it into a social club. My God is better than your God. I mean, but there's the God of the Islam, the God of the Jews, the God of the Christians, same God. They even got some of the same stories in the Old Testament. But we act like there's a difference because when Jesus showed up, he wasn't accepted among the Jews, and then the whites taught the blacks that Jesus was everything, and we all started developing these stories, and then we all start buying in because we didn't know it enough to be critical and say, how could this be? This was a great man, and he did great things, but there was other great men who did other great things. There's men in modern times, the Martin Luther King, the different people who did other things. It's like, all we should be talking about is man's humanity and how we treat each other. But we can treat each other bad, cling to our religion. And I just want to say this. I remember T.D. Jakes one time, and this is an indictment on religion. T.D. Jakes one time was speaking in the prison. And at the end of it, he went down and started shaking the hands of some of the inmates who wanted to meet him. And one of the administrators walked up to him and said, aren't you afraid of these guys? These are robbers and killers and people of your repute. And he said, well, I survived church folk. So it's like, you know, You know, we can play it that way. Can we love one another? Can we treat one another well? That's all that's important. Can we get through this crisis without nuclear war? That's what's important. You know, sorry for going on a tangent, but I am a minister.
Well, I think that this is important. This is an underlying force that is causing a lot of the rest of this injustice to occur. It causes separation of our moral leadership, and it also blunts the discussion of ethical behavior, because what you were describing is ethics. I believe that ethics trump morality because ethics is more universal. Morality is subjective. When I wrote my first book about Sudan, for example, is morally correct for a Sudanese man to marry 15 women? That is not true. It is not morally correct in America to have 15 wives. It's morally correct for a Sudanese woman's family to arrange for her to have a secret boyfriend. But that's not morally correct to do that here in America. But ethics are the same. None of us want someone to take our kids and abuse them. At least most of us don't. The majority of us don't want someone to take our food or our wife or our husband away from it. So when you talk about love being universal and love being something that can overcome all things. And so this is what I'm saying. We need much more unity so that we can face the miasma. And one of the things that we have here is, you know, the medication of our children, the electroshocking of our children, the restraints being put on our children, which is going to increase, especially if this legislation passes, whereas homeless people can be put into the mental health system. And the majority of people that are homeless are children. So, Reverend Shaw, can you talk about what types of medications are being prescribed to children?
Well, you have two of the most prescribed drugs, and I'll just talk about these two, are Ritalin and Adderall. And what is so disgusting is if you look it up, Adderall is basically the same drug as meth, and it's basically the same drug as cocaine. And it's been known for a long time that was so. There may be slight differences, but again, what we're doing is we're drugging our society. These drugs, let me just say this. They haven't made these drugs past clinical trials, just like the electric shock machine. They just been able to get in. The FDA, like I said, because most of the members of the FDA work for pharmaceutical companies, some made more money working for the pharmaceutical company than they made in their own private practices. They're not going to vote against these drugs. They'll play the game and make it seem like all of, but they're not going to do it. You know, and it's sad that we will give a kid a drug like Ritalin and Adderall, but those are the two most prescribed. Where is the ethics? You mentioned some very key words, morality and ethics. And my viewpoint of it is morality is like, I won't abuse children because God told me that I should not do that and I'm going to be punished for it. So I go with the moral code of that society. Ethics is more of a personal thing. It's like, I won't abuse children because I don't abuse children. I won't sleep with my friend's wife because I don't sleep with my friend's wife. Where morality is not right to sleep with my, because those are the moral codes that we came up with. So what you mentioned was ethics, and the field of psychiatry doesn't seem to have ethics. Otherwise, they could not do this. We mentioned earlier about this. Let me just show you why this all exists. If I'm a person and I get $350 an hour to counsel you on your issues, problems, things you need to get resolved, But I can call four people in, one every 15 minutes, prescribe them a drug, and charge 350 times four. I make more money prescribing the drug than I ever would doing the counseling, because I can only get that amount of money an hour, where I can in that hour and get four times that much. So I have literally been, because of the job situation where I left because people were doing evil things, where I went, the psychiatrist asked me, so what happened? I explained to him in about 2 to 3 minutes what happened, and he simply said, I can prescribe you two drugs. This was less than 5 minutes of evaluation. Even if they were experts and really could do something, most of them cannot handle your problem in 5 minutes. And there was no effort until I brought it up to get coping skills, how to deal with a job that's abusing you, all that. Then he actually said to me, I am a psychiatrist. I prescribe medicine. Wow. He sees no more use for his stuff than that. But he's at the top of the food chain, and he can't help anybody. He sends you to a class to where you can sit there with other people and try to talk it out. And, of course, the way I am, in 2 weeks I was running the class. The instructors were referring to me. Well, you've been in management. What do you think? Oh, well, you've dealt with this type of thing in your ministry. What do you think? In 2 weeks I was running the class. That's what we're looking at. That's where the problem is. When you talk about ethics and stuff, they have none.
Well, my definition of ethics is what's best for most people. If you look at the overall situation, like I said, it's best for most people that your wife is not taking away your kid or your money, your food, your car. It's best for most people that we're allowed to walk down the street without being assaulted. So my definition of ethics is, you know, what is the consensus or what is best for most people in terms of the people on the planet, you know, for example. So that's what I see in terms of that, whereas morality could be more based on one's religion or spiritual beliefs. So you talked about Ritalin and Adderall, and these are being prescribed for things like ADHD, correct?
Absolutely. These are the two most prescribed drugs, and it's primarily ADHD and those types in that family, yes.
And how many children are currently being prescribed this category of drug? Do you have any idea?
Right now, the last I checked, it may be more or less, probably less, because CCHR has been doing its due diligence on this and exposing it all over the world. The last I heard, in the United States, there were 6.9 million children on psychiatric drugs. So that is the equivalent of the Los Angeles Coliseum, which holds 100,000 people filled with nothing but children on psychiatric drugs 67 or 69 times.
I mean, well, that's ridiculous. But that is down. I believe in 2010, when I first started covering these kind of stories, it was like 8 million.
Yeah, and it may even be lower than that now, and I'm going to just tell you, not bragging, but the large percentage of that is because of the exposure we've been doing on these psychiatric drugs. You know, hundreds, thousands of people have gone through our museum. You know, I've done approximately since the pandemic started, 400 podcasts, radio shows, cable shows, streamlined. So we're getting the word out. The task force, which I'm going to invite you to be a part of, the task force against racism and modern-day genocide. You know, we have all I do is get community leaders, opinion leaders, people like that on that task force. There's over 100 and some people across the nation right now. I'm selectively picking people, radio show hosts, different people, on that, and you are more than welcome to be a member of that task force. Right now, we just provide information, and we're trying to get people to be activated and stand up. Just the same things that you were saying. I've been taking note of the things that you're talking about, people standing together, things like that, is exactly what we do. And basically right now it's not, other than the fact that we use the radio shows, magazines, things like that, to continue to get the word out. You've already qualified. So, you know, but the thing is that we have to activate people. We got to get them involved. We got to educate them on the issues so that they know what they're talking about and they're not easily fooled. You know, one of the things that we found is when I go on radio shows and some of these broadcasts of different nature, I get attacked sometimes. And when I start laying out the facts, the people fold just like dominoes. They just like, oh, well, I wasn't talking about electric shock. I'm not talking about the drugging. I agree with you on too much drugging. No, we should not, you know, I'm just talking about the field of mental health. Okay, well, we can separate that because I'm not against mental health. But I am against that which damages people, take away people's rights, that make us susceptible to the harms of society. I am against that. So that's the way I go on those things.
One of the stark things that I have come to grips with recently is the fact that my rights come from civil rights laws, whereas other Americans, people that are not people of color, white people, their rights come from the Constitution. And so there's a violation of our rights and our dignity as human beings with things like this. There is no reason that dedicated veterans that have gone to fight for this country are dying at a rate of 22 per day, and yet it's not even being mentioned. You know, it just doesn't make any sense that we have all of these vets out here pushing shopping carts around on the street, and people that have been damaged, their brains have been damaged by the mental health industry, and yet nobody's being held accountable for these things. And we have politicians that are legally taking bribes that they call lobbying. They're receiving $67,000 each from the pharmaceutical industry. That's the average. Some get more than that. And so how can they make ethical decisions? How can they make moral decisions? This is why we don't have our politicians standing up for us and allowing the mental health industry to just run amok and to destroy so many families. This is having so much damage, generational damage on our families. And yet people would rather watch a soap opera than to get involved with this. And so there's just a lack of empathy within our society, and that makes me very sad.
Yeah, it's really sad that we are, and I'm not going to contradict anything you say because it's absolutely true on what you're saying. I just can agree with it. And again, though, I'm going to say this in behalf of most of the doctors. I'm going to say this in behalf of most of the politicians. I found out that a lot of them don't know the issue. Not because they're dumb. It's just they only get one side of the story. For example, if you say, how can medical doctors be a part of this? You know, they take the oath not to do any harm. Well, most of them are busy. They work for companies. They see so many patients an hour. When they get a break, they read the medical journals, which some of them are funded by the pharmaceutical companies. They get the pharmaceutical rep to their facility and make proposals, so they don't get the other side of the story to know how bad these drugs may be. Politicians the same way. They're lobbied, and these guys come with the good news and mental health, and this is how these things become household words. And nobody challenges because nobody knows what it is. And then here comes a Fred Shaw, Walter Davis. These individuals start exposing it, and now these guys will take a look. But there is a lag period that goes on before they ever catch it on. I've been to the to D.C. lobbying Congress and U.S. senators on this killology thing. Most of them haven't heard of it. You see, so we assume that if you're in the industry, you know about it. But when I led a protest march in Atlanta, they were asking us, why are you protesting us? And we said, because of electroshock. And they were saying, we don't do electroshock. And we had to show them in their own book where they were holding the electroshock seminars and stuff right there at the convention they were at. And they didn't know. So, in fact, we had some psychologists who stopped us, black psychologists, who stopped us, and we told them what was going on, and they started marching with us. So a lot of times we assume that they should know or would know, but it doesn't mean that they do know. So that's what we're looking at.
And I agree with that. That is so true. And this is why, you know, I have been on a public information campaign for decades now in terms of attempting to educate the public, you know, and it's like I am a mouse yelling into the wind, you know, but I yell I must. I have to continue to yell. And we have had some significant victories, you know, as a result. But what I can advise people to understand is that mental health officials, whether they know it or not, they can force you to medicate your child. They can force you to electroshock your children. I have seen this situation occur where parents have lost their kids because they refuse to get these types of medications and electroshock types treatments done. So we have to work towards getting laws to ban these restraints and abusive types of treatments on our children. We have to file criminal complaints and civil lawsuits if our children are being damaged physically or chemically and being abused with these types of restraints. Do you not agree?
I do agree. And in fact, people can go to change.org and CCHR has a petition against electroshock on there. I think we've had over 125,000 signatures or more. And people can sign up on that because we're going to put this to where it becomes federal law. And I know if we can get it onto the books, then the people will vote against electroshock, especially since people don't even know electroshock is – some people don't even know it's still being done. And so, I mean, we still – as late as 2 weeks ago, I had somebody say, they still do that? You know, I thought it was outlawed. I had a psychologist challenge me at the Baptist Ministers Conference and tell me that they don't even do electroshock anymore. I had to give him the data and tell him where he could find it and told him that most of the people on the call had already seen the videotape on electroconvulsive therapy. And he was shocked, you know, and disappeared off the line. But he claimed to be a psychologist in the industry and doesn't know that.
So it seems like one of the biggest problems we have is ignorance. Ignorance is when you just don't know. Stupid is when you know and do it anyway. So what we have is a high level of ignorance throughout our society and even people involved in the industry.
Exactly. A lot of people. Now, I don't give that same excuse to psychiatrists because of the fact that they have to go through the process, I believe. And if I'm wrong, I can't be corrected, but they have to go through the process. They have to electroshock people as part of their training. They have to do all that. So they witness the effects of it. If you don't have the integrity to stand up, you know, when I was a law enforcement officer, I had integrity to stand up. I did not allow certain things to happen in front of me. Well, if you don't have that kind of gut, then how do you live with yourself? So you become part of an industry that is destroying people's lives, and you never speak up, which makes you, in my opinion, person doing the electroshock. Because if we say that the silence and the blue line of law enforcement is the problem, the same thing is the same in psychiatry.
Well, it seems like a lot of people are just being silent. You know, it's just It's the blue line of the police officers. It has to do with psychiatry, but also the American public is not engaged. It's like people don't find out how insidious this whole thing is until it actually gets to them, until it touches them, which indicates the lack of empathy and ignorance. So it seems as though the solution to this is to assuage the ignorance and then perhaps empower more empathy for people to get involved. Do you agree?
Yeah, and that's what I do. That's what we're trying to do. This is what this show is about. This is information and education so that people can have a choice. We don't tell people that they can't do whatever they think is best for them medically. If you believe you're a psychiatrist and you're willing to take that gamble and you're an adult, you know, we don't take your right to do that. But at the same time, we don't want them taking our right, and that's where it all comes down to. So, but yeah, you know, we have to come to the point in this where people are accountable, and that's where it all is. Psychiatry has to be accountable for what it's doing to society, and they have to prove that this electroshock, they have to prove that these drugs are effective, and they're not being made to do that. And when you hear all of the side effects of these drugs, which are not side effects, by the way, they're just the effect of the drug. They call it side effects because they don't want you to think that's what the drug was intended to do. So it's like to the side. See, we use words to lessen things. But the truth of the matter is all of those so-called side effects are of the drug. They know it, because they wouldn't have put the warning label on there if it wasn't true.
So how can people best help you in your mission? Can you tell people how to, you know, get information on a Citizens Commission on Human Rights, and how can they best assist you in accomplishing your mission?
Well, first of all, anyone who wants to truly get more information on this, you go to cchrint.org, cchrint.org. Not only do we have a wealth of information, we actually have a 3D tour of our museum on the site. We also have a drug database. So anybody that's on a drug, or you don't trust your drug, or you want to know what this drug is doing, you can put it into the database and get those effects. Other things that people have to be very careful of that they we don't know is when you're taking pain pills now, some of these pain pills are psychiatric drugs. And so people are taking this and they're finding themselves wanting to kill themselves and everything when all they were doing was trying to handle pain in the body. And that's not right. And I've had my own self where I told them I did not want an anti-seizure medication. I didn't want anti-seizure medication. I didn't want any psychiatric drug. I wanted a straight pain pill for the pain that I was going through. The doctor folded her arms and said, what I'm going to give you is none of those. What I'm going to give you is strictly for what's ailing you. I took it back to CCHR, and it was a psych drug. So, you know, unfortunately, it's getting where we can't even trust the medical profession, which should be one of the professions that we can trust. But we'll get to that at another time, because I still think I'm very careful of attacking on the drugs, because there are drugs that keep us alive when we should no longer have been in these bodies. There are drugs that do benefit. There are drugs that eliminate infection and help cure the body. So I'm not anti-pharmaceutical, but I am anti all the money being made on these bad drugs, and that has to stop. So now, if anybody want to know about the work that I'm doing, the protest against the American Psychological Association, recently you mentioned, interesting enough, about Sudan. And there was this model. She's from descent from Sudan. And the head of the psychiatric department for Columbia University, because her skin was really dark, referred to her as a freak of nature. as if being dark-skinned, you couldn't be beautiful. And anybody looking at her could tell she's beautiful. But the thing is that, you know, here you're pushing this idea that if you are beautiful and black, if, you know, you don't refer to white people or Hispanic people or anyone else who's beautiful like that, you don't refer to light-skinned black people like that. But dark-skinned black people, you refer to them as if they can't be beautiful unless it's some kind of freak of nature. That's not cool. So anyway, you can find all that type of stuff through how I respond to articles. You can find that on CCHRTaskForce.org, CCHRTaskForce.org. And if anybody wants to, who's a professional, who's a leader, who's a minister, who just call, text me and put Walter Davis' name or the show's name in the subject, and then I will consider you for the task force, and we can go from there. And you can do that by going fshawjr@yahoo.com.
Okay, and within the description of this broadcast, we do have those websites. We have the CCHR website hyperlink, so those of you that may be driving or in a situation where you can't write it down, simply go into the description of the broadcast, and you can find hyperlinks to the websites that were indicated. In addition, you can go to my websites at WalterDavisGlobalBroadcasting.com, as well as CitizensDemandingJustice.org, and find this particular show embedded within my blogs, Progress in the World Radio and Television Show.com, TheProgressiveThinkers.org. So there's a plethora of different ways in which you can get this show and get the hyperlinks to go into the pertinent websites, as well as references to the information that we have divulged during this broadcast. I would highly encourage you to share this broadcast by posting the links on Facebook and other social media to help us disseminate this information to others. This is a way in which we can reach the public and get our message out. And one of the things I want to also highlight to people, that there are people called actuaries, and actuaries are people that look at your particular zip code. That's how they determine how much your car insurance is going to be. That's how they determine how much your life insurance. So your life insurance and health insurance payments are actually governed by what zip code you live in. And thus, the actuaries can tell how many people are going to have accidents within a certain zip code and then adjust the prices of the insurance policies based upon what that data is. So an interesting thing has come out. As some of you may know, I have a financial services business that spans the entire country, all 50 states, Puerto Rico, and Canada. I'm able to deliver financial services virtually without having to come to your house. I can do financial needs assessment and help you develop a retirement plan and those kind of things. So my company is sponsoring these broadcasts. So one of the interesting things that has come out is that if you are alive in the year 2030, you can expect to live into the age of 120. So as you were saying, Reverend Shaw, there are some good drugs out here. There are some good advancements in the medical industry which are extending our lifespans. So I say again, if you are alive in the year 2030, you can expect to live to the age of 120 based upon data that's come out recently from actuaries and the insurance industry, and that is based upon advances in medical care and medical treatment. So some of you don't have a plan. Some of you will not have enough money to last that long. And so I highly encourage you to consider getting a financial needs assessment done, in which we can develop a plan for your retirement. And you'll also get a free copy of the book, How Money Works, Stop Being a Sucker, and a free financial needs assessment, which is a $500 value. The links to my websites, wealthwave.com/Walter Davis and howmoneyworks.com/Walter Davis, are contained within the description of this broadcast. Please take a look at those things and support me. This helps me continue on with my media broadcast. Another strategy that I would like to bring to your attention is to consider that we should be doing boycotts. We should be boycotting individuals, politicians and or companies and organizations that are continuing to damage our families with these harmful drugs, that are continuing to electroshock babies and the like. And so there's a way that we can really get their attention, and it won't take a large number of us, and that is with boycotting. So right now I'm preparing an animation that would explain the history of boycotts and how effective they can be. But we have seen some successful boycotts, such as the Montgomery bus boycott. And there are certain characteristics that go into that, such as we have to have a consensus on what satisfies the boycott. You know, when is it that we will stop doing it? So what are our demands? And that means that you can't say, well, we're just not going to buy gas on Friday. This is going to have to be sustained. The Montgomery bus boycott lasted for over a year and a half. So then how are you going to replace the service that you are boycotting? Well, the people in Montgomery, what they did was they picked each other up. They had the people that had cars. They saw people walking. So they would pick individuals up that they saw walking, and then they would make arrangements to give rides every morning. And then also coming back, people that were coming back in the evening from the downtown area or whatever, going home, would also pick up people. So you have to have contingencies to help each other replace the services that you are boycotting if they are essential like that. So, again, we do have some tools at our disposal. We do need to form citizens' oversight committees in which we hold these authorities accountable and that we continue to disseminate the information and factual data in terms of how they are affecting our families. How is electroshocking affecting our families? How is the drugging affecting our families and our communities? So my encouragement to you is to become engaged, and a part of that is to educate yourself. We have many broadcasts with CCHR on board this radio channel. Please look for them. Just do a search for CCHR in the search bar, and then all the shows that we've done in the past are going to come up, which we've been doing for more than a decade here. We have about 16 minutes left for Reverend Shaw. Is there any other information you want to give to the public before we close?
I would just like the public to know that we have to stand together on these issues. We cannot be part of the group think type thing where everybody thinks the same, is programmed to think the same, everybody follow orders. You know, man has a free will. And we have to exercise that will. If you for us or against us, you need to participate in the process, but you must do it from an informed point of view. You must do it by looking at both sides of the issue. One of the things that happened in Nazi Germany, the idea of their eugenics programs and that the people unworthy of life and those type of things on all of the movie screens in Germany. So it was able to sway the opinion to believe that their behavior was correct. One of the things that people do not know is behind it all, the person who signed off on the paper, those who decided who lived and died, were the psychiatrists. And if it had not been for the Americans who basically realized that the whole field of psychiatry could have been wiped out, who came to the aid of those psychiatrists in Germany, and helped them blame the whole thing on a handful of them. And then the rest of them was able to go throughout the world, including the United States, with their eugenics program. So the thing is we got to understand that this thing didn't just show up. This has been a plot for a long time. One of the things that I wanted to share with the audience, and I don't know if at some date in the future we'll do part three, is the fact that everything we see going on, the attack on religion, the attack on education, the attack on minorities, the supporting of racism, all of these things come out of the field of mental health. And so, you know, and we have the documentation to trace it back. So I know when the first volley was done against religion, when it said that man did not have a soul, I know when they to be able to undermine, and these aren't the exact words, but they said they had to be able to put a useful attack on a number of professions. And the two easiest was the educational system and the church. These are things that are documented that was part of the plot to destroy morality. So so that we don't know the difference between good and evil. They called it a crippling burden. So these are the things that we have to be able to do and realize who is the true enemy, who profits on the misery of man. And regardless of the white smock and the nice smile, that means nothing. It is the action that you do who tell me who you are. And I just want to thank you, Brother David, for allowing me to come on the show, for giving me this platform. I'm more than willing, if you have to debate any psychiatrist on this show, any psychologist. I say that on most shows because I'm not afraid, because I know the data that's backing me up. I know how we got it, and this is data that is proven. So if they want to come on and have to deal with it, they can, but I haven't been able to get a debate now in 13 years. So, you know, it's that's how sound the information that I have is. And people can go to CCHRN and find all of these different videos on racism, on the Holocaust, on education and stuff right out of that museum. And I even, we will even, if a person wants to, try to get them the videos on electric shock or the booklet on how psychotropic drugs cause suicide and violence. We have all of that documentation.
And I know a lot of you are listening now. I see people coming in and out in terms of dialing in. If you'd like to ask questions, we do have 11 more minutes here. You can call 310-861-2349 if you want to make a comment or ask a question with Reverend Shaw or myself. Again, the number is 310-861-2349. 310-861-2349. If you want to make any comments or ask any questions, you have 11 minutes to do so. Reverend Shaw, your knowledge and dedication to this are just phenomenal. I really appreciate you and the information that has been put forth. I am privileged to have a platform in which I can help you transmit this message worldwide, and that's why I've done, you know, a lot of work on my blogs where it's easy to share it. Those of you that are looking at my blogs, you know, you see the share buttons at the bottom. Please put this out on Facebook and Twitter to your own respective circles and help us to disseminate this information to the public, because this is a deadly situation, just as we had the show last week on Killology, a plan really to train police officers to kill without feeling remorse. And this is a ridiculous situation when they have on the side of their cars, protect and to serve. Well, I don't think they're serving or protecting me very well if they have a mentality that killing me is very easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I thank you for providing this platform. And anything, like when you go on cchrtaskforce.org, anything you want to take off of that and put on your blog, you know, you can use it. If you want to do magazine or any type of article, you know, I know you're a writer, you can use that information. That's why it's there. It's for all of the task force members. And if you become one or not, you still have the right as a host, as a journalist, as a person who has supported CCHR, you have the right to go on my site and take anything I have on that site and put it on display for the public so people can get information.
Well, I'll do just that. Again, I'll encourage you to look at my various blogs, which are citizensdemandingjustice.org, Walter Davis, globalbroadcasting.com, Progress in the World Radio and TV Show.com, and The Progressive Thinkers, theprogressivethinkers.org, my oldest blog. I've actually had this blog for 24 years. I was blogging long before most people knew what a blog was. And thus, it's a privilege for me to have been helping organizations like CCHR for decades disseminate information And we've had some dramatic changes. I mean, with the banking coalition, one of the reasons why people are getting their public assistance on the cards, the EBT cards, as opposed to getting food stamps, came about because of the banking coalition and the Caring Council. Changes in the way that people are being handled in terms of human trafficking and slave trade. Police officers have ways of not putting women in jail now that have been forced into prostitution. There's avenues to avoid that, thanks to people like Senator Kuehl, who was heavily involved with us. So a small number of us have been able to make great changes. And I just want to encourage everyone to understand that we have to get involved. We cannot allow situations where infants are being electroshocked. I've got a little grandbaby, a little granddaughter coming in May, and the thought of her being electroshocked, it's just unbelievable. I've got a four-year-old grandson, and I cannot allow your grandson to be electroshocked and given drugs if I don't want mine to be. So we all have to have a community approach towards this. It's not just your kids. It's not just their kids. I think Martin Luther King said that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so we all must get involved. We all have to become part of this. You can't wait until it hits you. It's too late then, because your life will be turned upside down. You won't have the power. You won't have the emotional strength, perhaps, and you won't know what to do. So the time to fight back against this is now. It comes to get you, and it will. It's going to affect you in one way or the other, whether you realize it or not. Right, Reverend?
That's absolutely correct. You hit it right on the head. And this is the thing that we have to do as communities. We have to do as free people. We have to do as a people, period. And I just wanted to say something. You mentioned earlier about how, you know, some people are protected under the Constitution, where black people have never truly been protected under that. And we have to understand that during all of this, no matter if it was Democrat or Republican, nobody has found it to where they could handle the voting rights issue. It's like people can come into this country, and once they're citizens, they're citizens. So why do we still have to address this issue? And I say to our people that we have to get involved. We have to tell our politicians, we'll put people in those seats that will vote in our best interest. Otherwise, you know, why are they there? You know, this thing that we elect politicians so that they can go work for the big companies, that has to die out. We can't do that. They got to represent us and our values and our issues. And they need to bring things to us. They represent our people. They're not our masters. They're not our controllers. They have to represent us, and we have to make sure that we take responsibility for what happens to us, and we don't say they did this to us. When we allow it, we did it to us. If we stop them, then, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. But we can't walk around blind and continuing to let things go as they are, because we'll have a point where there is no reversing it. And we're just done for.
One of the things I have observed is that we have a lack of adaptability. So if it is raining outside, you get an umbrella. If it's cold outside, you get a coat. So if we have people that are going to take away our freedoms, if we have people that are going to perpetrate injustice against us, we can't just lay back and keep pointing the finger and blaming them. We got to do something. We have to adapt to protect ourselves and our families. We must find ways in which we don't allow them to do these things. We don't allow them to take away our kids and electroshock them. We don't allow them to force parents to drug their kids. And on and on and on, I've seen this happen over and over again. It was happening 10 years ago. It's still happening right now. You know, my father was murdered during the Civil Rights Movement, and there's still black men being shot down in the street right now. There's still poor people of all races being mistreated in this country, where money talks and money is the rule. But love should be the rule. Why don't we have a department of love in our country? You know, that may sound ridiculous, but we should have a department that evaluates actions. Are we taking loving actions? That should be weighed. We can't just take actions against people and make actions without looking at the long-term effects and the effects across the board. So what I propose and what I do in my life and what my questions are, is that action a loving action? Is that something that someone would do that is trying to manifest love in our community? We've been taught that people that are focused on our community are communists, and that's a bad thing. People that are focused on our society are socialists, and that's a bad thing. Yet there are abusive forms of socialism. We see that. There are abusive forms of communism. We see that playing out in Russia and also in communist China. But there's also abusive forms of democracy, which we have in this country. There are abusive forms of capitalism that we see in this country, where people are allowed to go hungry, where little kids are allowed to sleep on the bridges and not have shelter, where women are being forced to have babies when they've been raped, and there are other medical conditions that dictate that maybe another outcome should be that situation. We have to stand up for something. We got to stand up for ourselves and our families, and that means we have to educate ourselves to know what the issues are, and it's right there in front of your face.
Exactly. I agree with you wholeheartedly, my brother.
So with that, we're down to our last minute and 50 seconds. It's really been a pleasure. I really appreciate those of you that came aboard the chat room and those of you that are listening now on your cell phones and listening online. Again, I encourage you to please share this information. I apologize for the technical problem that we have. Occasionally we have that, whereas in the beginning of the broadcast, the Skype connection simply dropped. Maybe something atmospheric, who knows. But with that, I'm going to continue to move on and just pick it back up and keep moving. You know, I might not be responsible for being knocked down, but I am responsible for getting back up again. And that's what I keep doing over and over and over again. Educate yourself. Take action. Look at what the real situations are so that you can speak from a level of intelligence and factual information. And that's what's so important and critical for us to survive and for us to get the best outcome in this struggle that we have for human rights and the struggle that we have for dignity to live in our society. And that's what progress in the world is all about. It's about looking at the impossible, things that are not possible today, but they will be possible in the future. And one day we will be able to live in love. And with that, I'm going to close with a song by Lazy Batuzu called Copa. And I thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much, Reverend Shaw. You're just an outstanding human being.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you greatly.
Good luck, everyone, and stay safe out there in this COVID world, and keep on striving.
Bye.